It's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 17th of July, 2025. How are you? I hope you're well. Thanks for tuning in to us here on the 9 to noon show. You won't regret it. Over the next 3 hours, we've got so much coming up on the programme. We're going to have great chats with great people. We're going to be highlighting some of the issues that are important to you. We've got community guard information. That and so much more besides. Right, so it's your show. Get involved in that conversation. 086 60 25000. Maybe you've got an issue you want to raise with us. Give us a call on 07491 25000, and of course email comments@highlandradio.com. and if you're listening to the podcast or the repeat, the early morning repeat, feel free to email comments@highlandradio.com. we'll pick up your comment and include it in the next live show, I guarantee. And if you want to watch the show, maybe you're at home, working in the home, we're on YouTube, so you can open up your Fire Stick or your Smart TV, open the YouTube app, type in Highland Radio Ireland, give us a like and a subscribe, and just watch the show as you would any TV show. And we're on the X platform, August, the Facebook pages as well. You heard it in the news there, and we've been talking about this for so long. It's the pressures of sending children back to school. It was always like the books, you know, you had to get new books every year, and we seem to be making some inroads into that. But then it's the uniforms and it's the sportswear and all that kind of stuff. And you know yourself, some schools only have one supplier, and if you want to go to the to get your uniform, there's no iron-on crest. You have to go and get it embroidered, and there's no way to shop around. Well, the government's trying to make changes in this regard. We've been down this road before. I do wonder, as we are the most deprived county in Ireland, if you would like to see these rules enforced. So the rules, according to the Irish Times, the rules covering uniform supplies and technology put in place by many schools could be needlessly increasing costs for parents while harming competition across the education sector, the consumer watchdog has warned. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, I attribute this to the government, it's something being flagged by the CCPS, CCPC, my apologies, has written to primary and post-primary schools outlining a series of recommendations on back-to-school costs. It is advising schools to use generic uniform items and ensure a competitive process underpins the appointment of any exclusive suppliers for school uniforms, tech devices and software. Now, I know parents who are already doing the uniforms for September because they have to get them in parts because they're so expensive. So if you have any examples there of your school, you know, how much is the uniform, particularly if you don't have a choice or you can't get a crest, like, just curious to get a sample in Donegal and the wider Northwest. What are the costs, you know, of a jumper? Is there two or three places that you can shop around, or do you have to go to the one place? Let us know. 086 60 25000. The CCPC has also asked schools to consider whether arrangements are likely to restrict competition and increase costs for parents and guardians during the upcoming back to school season. Now, they're still at school for this year, most of them, but you know what I mean. So just really interested to wonder, to find out in what areas too you might have concerns. As I say, really, it would be about having to get crested jumpers or tracksuits or what have you. What's the cost? Are there cheaper alternatives, or do you have to go down this route? Have we made any improvements in that regard? Let us know. 086 60 25000. Everything that happens globally is local. So, you know, you'd often wonder, whilst we keep a close eye on what's happening in the Middle East, whilst we aren't directly affected by it, as it might seem, we really are, because it is a big oil-producing part of the world, and they're starting to bomb each other's oil networks as well. And that means that fuel and heat and prices are soaring. Not now, probably, when we don't need it as much, but as we head into the winter. So I'll read on from the Irish Independent. The Israeli attacks on Iran have prompted fears that petrol, diesel and home heating oil prices will shoot up. Petrol and diesel prices have been rising for days, and there's also been a surge in the cost of home heating oil. The price of 1,000 litres of heating oil has risen by €25 in the past few days, with energy experts expecting more hikes. Brent crude is up by 8% since the first strikes on Iran last Friday, and was up by 13% at one stage. This has raised fears of even higher increases in the price of petrol, diesel, diesel and heating oil late on Saturday, Iran and Israel struck a key fuel depot while an oil refinery in the capital, Tehran, was also in flames. So they're bombing each other's infrastructure, and it is going to cost us as well. Iran has also partially suspended production at the world's biggest gas field, the South Pars, after an Israeli strike caused a fire there. And of course, the way we attribute VAT and our carbon levies, it all increases. That all increases in line with the core price increase as well. So we get it kind of every which way. Interesting survey out about, you know, how we consume news, where we trust our news. The picture in Ireland is different to other countries. Irish people are more interested in the news and have better trust in mainstream media compared to the UK and the US. 56% of you say they are extremely or very interested in news, according to the Irish Digital News Report 2025 published today. This is higher than the UK at 39% or the US at 51% and ahead of the European average at 45%. So 45% of Europeans are interested in news, but in Ireland that number is 56, which is really quite interesting. Irish people have a higher interest in news, up to 3% on last year. It's fallen significantly, though, from a peak of 70%. You will know that that would have been during the pandemic. Just 3% of those surveyed in this country said they are not at all interested in the news. Irish audiences also trust mainstream news outlets more compared to other countries, with 50% saying they trust the news most of the time. And it's really quite interesting that local or regional radio, 72% of you see that as the most trusted brand. In fairness to papers, a lot of trust there as well, 71%. RTE News too, trust in RTE News is at 72%, which is I think that's it. I'm not saying it's not trustworthy. Of course, is that though? I just thought between independent media and state media, I thought there would be a little bit of a variance, but there doesn't seem to be. But it's still, the figures are incredibly, incredibly high. The Irish Daily Sun this morning: low-income families look set for a cash boost after Micheál Martin said nothing is off the table in the upcoming budget. The Taoiseach vowed the government will focus on two key issues: improving disability services and tackling child poverty. However, income tax cuts for workers look set to be sacrificed in order to lower the VAT rate for the hospitality sector. What do you think about that? So something's got to give in order to lower the VAT rate for the hospitality sector, which is not just our local excellent offerings. It's also potentially to the gougers in Dublin. You're not going to get a cut in your income tax, so that can be funded. I don't know what you think about that. Minister Pascal Donoghue yesterday warned that tough decisions need to be made. A previous report from the ESRI recommended a second tier of child benefit for lower income families to help tackle child poverty in Ireland. This would be means tested and paid at a higher rate in the universal than the universal monthly 140 payment for all youngsters, which I think is, I know there is sort of this sense that all children must be treated equally and what have you, but I would be very much in favour of any excess money being targeted to those that need it the most. We are seeing an increase in children who are impoverished long term, and we claim to be a rich country, so that's crazy. So if they do that, I'd be very much in favour of that. Target the money, means test it so the people that need it most get it. Not at the expense of others, but you know where I'm coming from. Right, towards the end of the programme, we were flagging that a pre-excavation was to begin at the notorious former mother and baby home. Well, it did begin yesterday. The preparatory phase, which will last around 4 weeks, comes ahead of the full-scale excavation of the site in Tuam, County Galway, to try to identify the remains of infants who died at the home between 1925 and 1961. In 2014, research led by historian Catherine Corliss, who was on with us yesterday, indicated that 796 babies and young children were buried in a sewage system at the institution across that period of time. What a huge amount of sadness there. I'm joined on the programme by Bishop Michael Reuter of the Irish Bishops Drugs Initiative. Good morning, Bishop. Thank you so much for your time.
Great to be Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good, and it's great to have you with us. And we're talking about changes to for children making their confirmation next year. It's quite an interesting one. What traditionally has been the pledge, Bishop?
Well, traditionally, the pledge was added to the confirmation ceremony in Ireland. It's specifically an Irish thing back in the 1930s. It happened after the Eucharistic Congress, and it was linked to the temperance movement that had grown in Ireland since the late 19th century. And over the years, it was basically alcohol, asking the young people who were receiving confirmation to abstain from alcohol till they were 18 years of age. About 30 years ago or so, drugs was added to that as well, illegal drugs. So the pledge has been very much part and parcel of the tradition, I suppose, of people receiving confirmation in this country.
I remember when we made the pledge, or I made the pledge, and it was the pre-drugs being added in, I must say. It felt significant, you know, it did feel significant. Do young people in your experience, Bishop, still take it as seriously? You know, because it was sort of... It grew in significance because of how it was. We were prepared in school, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I think it's quite significant because when you think about it, it's the first major decision that young people at that age, you know, 11, 12 years of age, take about their future in a way. And it was always significant. It was significant for me as well. I made my confirmation in the mid-70s. It was simply about alcohol, as you say, at that stage as well. Over the years, it's changed a little bit. There was a period of time where there was a question mark about whether we should be asking young people to make this commitment at that stage in their lives. So a lot of parishes changed their practice. Some of them did away with it altogether, really just let it die effectively. Others then linked it to the Ceremony of Light, which is one of the ceremonies in the parish in preparation for confirmation. So it wasn't part of the actual ceremony itself. So I'd say only about maybe less than a third of ceremonies nowadays would you actually hear the bishop or the priest talk about the pledge as such and ask the children to take it.
Really? That's
also...
Sorry, Bishop. I thought this was pretty standard, no? So I know you may have...
No, it's not. It's not as standard as it used to be. It used to be right across the board. But I suppose from the sort of late 80s, early 90s onwards, the practice did change. And it became a more private thing. In the past, when I did it at my confirmation, we stood up and we took the pledge, and everybody did it, and everyone saw who was taking the pledge in the church. So there was no hiding place, really, in a way. But that changed, as I said, and it became part of the preparation for confirmation rather than the confirmation ceremony itself. And even when it was done at the confirmation ceremony, if any confirmation ceremony I do it at nowadays, you would ask, you know, the children to repeat the words after you if they were taking the pledge. Not all of them decide to do so. But they wouldn't stand up. It would be done quietly just to protect them from being, you know, that they don't stand out from the crowd, or the ones who aren't taking it don't stand out either, you know. So it's just a more private thing. But I think it's still very important because it's a huge opportunity to raise awareness.
Yeah, okay. But I mean,
the issues around alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the listeners think about the change there, or what you know. It is changing next year, which I think is really interesting. And I think it's probably going to be one of the only triggers, really, for a good conversation at a good age, in my view, about smoking to a lesser extent, but particularly vaping.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the vaping issue has only really appeared on the scene in the last couple of years. And it's only really in the last year or so that awareness has arisen about the dangers that is involved in vaping, that some of the vapes contain synthetic cannabis, synthetic cannabinoids, and they can have a very serious effect on a young person. And vapes are quite popular with young people, unfortunately, and quite readily available. And we've had a few, like I'm the liaison bishop, the Irish Bishops Drugs Initiative, and a number of parents have contacted the Drugs Initiative to ask for information about vapes, ask that we, talk about vapes when our director, Darren Butler, goes to schools to speak to schools, that he would speak about vaping, because there's been a few serious incidents. In fact, Dr. Bobby Smith, who is the leading psychiatrist, adolescent psychiatrist in the country, he has said that in the past year, about 20 to 25% of the cases that present to him include problems with vaping.
Yeah, I mean, no situation, I don't think we should ever want, whether it be energy drinks or whatever, someone who's still physically and mentally developing as well, to become dependent on one of the hardest things to kick, nicotine. You know, even if we weren't to talk about the potential health issues, simply having someone dependent on inhaling a burnt vapor and the impact that might have on their developing brain and body in and of itself is good enough reason to say, hold on a second, you know, relax here. Because it is, I think it's seen as okay amongst an awful lot of young people, to be honest with you, not that bad, not too bad,
yes.
And cool, because they can do their smoke rings and they can do all this type of stuff. So it's the perfect storm for a early teen addiction.
Yes, and we have very little idea what actually is in most of the vapes. And even though the vapes are sold in specialist shops where there isn't supposed to be anyone under 18 there, we have lots of cases where 16 and 17-year-olds have been sold vapes. It's very difficult, I suppose, unless you ask for an ID, it's very difficult to know the difference sometimes. But these vapes are having serious psychotic effects because it's not all just nicotine. You know, when you're talking about a synthetic cannabis, that's very serious for a young and developing brain. And it has had huge repercussions across the country. Like to say that in a year, 20 to 25% of cases presenting now for adolescent psychiatric services are relating to vapes, that is a remarkable jump.
Yeah, and it's a very important point you make, actually, because, you know, whilst we might think it's bad enough that your young person is vaping liquid that contains nicotine, the CBD or whatever it's marketed as is widely available. So you might think, wow, it's terrible that my young person is vaping nicotine, when in fact, outside of your knowledge, they may actually be taking something far more serious. Stay with me, Bishop, because our Father John Joe Duffy joins us as well. Good morning, John Joe. Thanks so much for your time this morning. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, and you're backing the Bishop on this one.
Yeah, Greg, good morning. Good morning, Bishop Michael. Good morning, listeners. I very much back the initiative of the Bishop and the Bishop's Conference and the particular committee. So thank you, Bishop. I think it's to be very much welcomed. It's very timely as well, in that in England or in the United Kingdom, they are banning single vapes in order to protect children, because you can buy a vape at €5 in shops, and the single vapes are very easily accessible for young people, and they're cheaper as well. And I think, again, it shows the concern the church has been cognizant of the many issues facing young people and the many mental health issues facing young people, that and the trends that young people are under pressure to follow, trends that you get from social media and from peer pressure and so on, from social media and influencers and so on. So I think it's a great initiative on the part of the church, recognizing the many issues facing young people and trying to help them and trying to encourage them and trying to get debate going about vapes and the drugs, alcohol. 1 in 5 deaths in Ireland is related to lung disease. So this is a wonderful initiative, and I thank the bishop and all involved.
Yeah, Father John, you'll stay there for a moment. Bishop Michael Rute, before I let you go, we do have a vacancy in this part of the world, Bishop of Raphoe, and I'm just wondering if it's... I've had your name linked to it on more than one occasion, Bishop. Have you any exclusive for me, or have you any expression of interest, or what can you say, if anything?
Absolutely none, Greg. There's always, when there's this interregnum between one bishop and another, there's loads of names that go around, and I mean, we're not part of this decision and discussion that goes on at a different level. It's well above my pay grade. So I'm afraid I can't offer any.
Would you be open to the conversation, let me ask?
Well, I think we're having the conversation now, and that's about as much as I can do for you at the moment, unfortunately. So it is. So sorry about that, Greg.
Not at all.
And I can't give you any.
All I would say is that you. All I can say is you'd be incredibly welcome, and we appreciate this too, in keeping an eye out for our children. Thank you so much, Bishop.
Thank you very much.
Take
Greg.
Care
Thank
of yourself. You. Father John Joe, before I let you go, if you don't mind, obviously, you know, yes, you're a very vocal person in the community, and you take that role really quite seriously. I did note that you put out just a little bit of information for people to exercise caution in, you know, around the place off the back of an alleged attempted abduction, which is being investigated by Gardaí, and you urged vigilance. We're not going to get into the ins and outs of it, for we simply don't know. But you must have been hearing a lot of concerns for you to decide to intervene, sort of, I suppose, in that way.
Well, the concerns were reported by the media, and the Gardaí said that there was an incident. What sort of incident that is, I do not know, other than it was an incident around somebody seemingly walking on the road. And I suppose when I say to be careful, it is something that we all need to be, or everyone needs to be careful, especially around children, around women, and around vulnerable adults. And it is very important and vital that we always urge people to be careful and seek to protect people, as we're doing in this particular issue with the vaping, to protect people as they walk on the roads and so on, in all sorts of ways. So
yeah. Again, I think the message was to be...
I think if anyone has any information in relation to that matter, to give it to the Gardaí, or any other matter like that, to pass that on to the Gardaí, because it is so vitally important that our communities are safe places, and safe places for people to walk freely and openly, and not to be in any way attempted to be coerced into a car, or whatever the case may be. And I'm not particularly aware of the particular details of this incident, other than what was reported on Highland Radio, and also in breaking news where I picked it up.
Mm-hmm. Calm and cautious. I think it's very fine advice in any scenario, or wherever you are, and keep an eye out on each other.
And should anyone stop to pick anyone up, be that anyone, from adult to child, or a vulnerable, you know, just be calm, be cautious, and don't get into a car with anyone, or if you're invited into a car, be very careful, you know, especially around people that you have no knowledge of and don't know, and that's so important. And I thank the Gardaí for the work that they are doing in relation to this and other matters. But in our communities, we have to be cautious ourselves as well, and that's a sad reality, isn't it?
It is indeed, Father. It feels changing anyway. Of course, all we're more aware. You know what I mean. Sometimes you don't know which it is. But Father John Joe, as always, thank you so very much indeed. I really appreciate your time.
Take care,
Father John Joe Duffy, there, who initially came on to welcome the bishop, stating that from next year, vapes and smoking will be included in that pledge. Interested to hear that the pledge changed. I thought, and maybe it's just I'm showing my age, I thought standing up and making the pledge, that's what, for me, sort of gave it its significance. Not that I adhered to it for very long, just to be completely honest. But now it's done, for the most part, seemingly in most cases, where if you wish to privately, you follow the words of whomever is overseeing the confirmation. There you go. Learn something every day. 086 60 25,000. A caller says medical science consistently shows that delaying the onset of alcohol consumption, smoking and vaping has significant long-term benefits for brain development, physical health and reducing the risk of addiction. The pledge encourages healthier lifestyle choices. Delighted to hear the bishop introducing this. Indeed. I think that's going to have a broad welcome amongst the Catholic. Catholics that would be making confirmational have those who might. Doesn't necessarily apply to everybody, of course. A caller says, sounds like an enforcement issue to me. Punish shops for selling vapes to kids. It's absolutely mad. We've moved straight to ban for adults because they didn't stop vapes selling to kids. Like, it's not that hard. We do it for smokers and drinkers already. Well, there's loads of vape shops that you can go into if you wish, and you can go and you can buy your mods and your coils and your liquids and all that type of stuff. And to be honest with you, I wonder how many of you are vaping, know how much nicotine actually is in the vape that you're taking. You know, you can get nicotine 0, 3, 6, 12. I think those disposable vapes of nicotine in can be anything from 18 to 25, like way more nicotine than you might get in a cigarette. So there are shops out there that you can go in still, and you can go in still. And anyway, you can still get single-use vapes here at the moment. They're looking to ban them, but there are shops that you can go in and get whatever you like, if you so wish. Greg, just to let people know, opt-out organ donation is not live until 10. Doesn't say that on the website. You wouldn't need to pass on between now and then. What is your views on that? There seems to be a very anti-move to this. By the way, from today, you are an organ donator. You're an organ donor if you're an adult in Ireland, unless you state otherwise. And we'll get you the link for that, because there seems to be a bit of a pushback on it. Last year, there were something like 270,000 organ donations. 270, sorry. I'll get that figure, but 270. So it's from a pretty low base. These are life-saving organ donations. But there seems to be this conversation as if it's about, you know, the government owning your body after you die and all that type of stuff. I don't know. I don't see it like that. Some people do. But anyway, just to note that from today, you, if you're an adult and if you haven't opted out, you are an organ donor. Right. Now, Gavin Walker is chair of Campaign My Death, My Decision. And he joins us on the programme right now. Good morning to you, Gavin. Thank you for your time.
Very good morning, and good morning to your listeners. How are you?
I am doing good. Now, MPs are preparing to cast their final votes on whether they believe assisted dying should be legalised for terminally ill patients. Obviously, a move that you'd be very much in favour of?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, it only applies to England and Wales, that particular piece of legislation. But nevertheless, it would be certainly a big step forward. There are some things about the legislation that perhaps people have concerns around, but at least they're having a conversation in England and Wales, as indeed you are in the Republic. But here in Northern Ireland, absolutely no conversation whatsoever. So we're way behind as far as this is concerned. But it's important to us that on Friday this piece of legislation passes, because it then puts the pressure on our local elected representatives to hopefully finally grasp this particular issue and go with it. Just because it's difficult doesn't mean we shouldn't have the conversation.
A lot of people have concerns about it too, and a lot of them are coming from within the medical industry, particularly those that have been in it for some time. The fear that, you know, that this, I don't want to put words in the mouth, but the impression I get from them that it, in some way it devalues life and the level of care that they provide, and trying to make people's lives as long and as comfortable as possible, and just sort of we could find a situation whereby, you know, if you get older or terminally ill, that you just, you know, cast to one side, do the right thing, you know, make your decision, stop being a burden.
Well, the number of things there. First of all, being older is not a criteria for having an assisted death. You need to have, most legislation around the world means that you have to have a terminal illness.
No, sorry, I presumed that. Sorry, I should have made that clear, Gavin. I meant sort of like with a cancer or MS or, you know, and also say, for instance, we have this conversation about if someone has cancer, right, whether they're sent for treatment because of their age. It's a conversation that Bea's had. But anyway, thanks for clarifying that nonetheless, Gavin, but continue.
No, it's okay, because it's just sometimes people do get concerned around this and have certain issues around this that really are not based in fact. So I just want to be sure that we're clear there. So the reality is, though, if you have a terminal, if you've been given a terminal diagnosis, your life is upside down. Everything is just completely confused for you. Having an opportunity then to decide, because you are now on a pathway to a death, sadly. So giving somebody the autonomy to make a decision for themselves to how they want to end their life, when they want to end it, and who they want to have there with them, I think is something that is really a human right. Now, not everybody will want to take advantage of this. And in fact, whenever you look at the various jurisdictions around the world, and Greg, at the moment it's available in about 31 jurisdictions around the world. The facts show that a lot of people don't even apply for assisted death. Those that do, very few of them actually go through with it in the end because they've had a comfortable death. They're quite happy to use the palliative care they have available to them. But for those few people that actually want to take this as their choice, I think that's a right they should have. I don't think it's a threat to anybody else. Obviously, there needs to be some different things in place to make sure that we do not, people aren't coerced into it.
Does it matter what someone's motivation to make that choice were? Let me go back to the sort of the burden comment. So does it matter if someone, say, for instance, in their 50s is diagnosed with a terminal illness? Would MS, for an example, be classed as a terminal illness?
Yes, it is.
Okay, right. So let's say MS, for an example, and we have someone in our family that lived with MS for almost 30 years, but be that as it may. Does it matter if their motivation is because they don't themselves want to slowly deteriorate, or whether or not they're thinking of those around them and say, you know, I don't want to put my family through this. I don't want them to be burdened with my care. Not that we'd see it as a burden, right? So does it matter which of those is their motivation, in your view, to seek assisted dying?
Well, ultimately, I think it has to be their decision. Mm. We need to be clear that they've come to that decision clearly in their own minds. Of course, we don't want people to feel like they are a burden, but the reality is that we do. We do, and not only people who have terminal illnesses. If you have the flu for a week and you're in bed and you're having to be looked after, you feel a bit of a burden. Not that I'm comparing the two, but nevertheless, being a burden, I think, is just a reality, and we can't get rid of that. People should not, by any means, take that as the reason to have an assisted death. But I think it would be unfair to say that wouldn't be a consideration for them. The important thing is that people come to the decision themselves, a clear decision, not coerced into it, and that they know exactly what it is they want. And evidence shows, again, and I do think it's important, don't take my word for it, I do think it's important your listeners gather the evidence around themselves.
No, it's always critical. Research. It's always critical, for sure.
It absolutely is, because there are, on both sides of the campaign, because this is a fairly emotional subject, people who will be a little bit over the top with whatever it is they're trying to promote. So I think it's important that we each individually come to this decision ourselves, because ultimately it'll be us who has to make a decision as to whether we do or do not want to have an assisted death. I think the frustrating thing at the moment is that the government, your government is not, I say your government, the government of the South,
understood, yeah,
has gone through the whole process of having a committee in place, a report is in the Oireachtas, but they aren't actually moving this forward. That is really, really, not only frustrating, but I think cruel to those who are sitting waiting to hear if they can take advantage of this or not. And here in the North, as I say,
these are in no man's land. Yeah, you're stuck between two to countries that are having the conversation, and it's not even being had in Northern Ireland. What protections would be in place in Britain, for an example, to ensure that someone isn't being coerced and that they are sort of sound mind to make that decision for themselves?
Yeah. Well, within the bill at the moment at Westminster, in order to qualify for an assisted death, you need to have, first of all, you have to have a terminal illness. At this stage, you have to be have a prognosis of 6 months to your death. In itself, that's cruel. I'm happy to talk about that, but I think that's quite a cruel choice. So those are the two criteria you have to be within. Then you have to have two doctors who say that you are in sound mind. Then you need to go before a panel, and then at the end of all of that, you would then be able to have your assisted death should you choose to do so. But to be absolutely honest with you, those last 6 months of somebody's life, to have to go through the whole process that requires, I think is cruel and unnecessary. And to give you an idea, in the Isle of Man, for example, it's 12 months. And in Scotland, if and when that goes through, as soon as you have actually had your terminal diagnosis, you'll be able to apply for assisted death.
Yeah, which is similar, I think, in other European countries as well, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Is there any provision for mental health to be considered for assisted dying?
No. Do you mean?
I don't know. I don't know. In other words, you know, if it's probably no is the answer, but is there any provision whereby someone could be suffering irreparably, as they might feel it, with mental health, depression or what have you, and be able to avail of assisted dying legally?
No, there isn't. And that at this point, nowhere around the world is that given credence. However, having said that, and people will obviously quote this, in Canada at the moment they are considering that particular step, which they will look at, I think, in March of next year. Not necessarily that they'll go ahead with that, but that's a whole different argument. I think we're way.
Yeah. See, what I struggle with this, just as a person, is, you know, I find it very hard to really judge on someone else or what position they're in. Do you know, I find it hard to be sort of say, oh, you can't do that, but sure, I don't know what it might be like for that person who I might love and respect and might want that. And then at the same time, you know, it's just a difficult one. It's a real dilemma because, you know, firstly, you say, well, what if it was me? And then you say, well, what if it was someone close to me? Would I want to see them suffer? But then you sort of think, well, could it change our view of life? You know, because you know, say, for instance, in the issue of abortion, right? And they're very different, but they're kind of morally the same, of course. You know, people voted here to have abortions in certain circumstances. But then those circumstances, well, as it turns out, an awful lot more abortions are taking place than people might have anticipated. And I think that also is what people get nervous of. Sorry if I'm conflating two issues, is that it starts off all well and good, all checks and balance and all for the right reasons. And then it does accelerate whereby it's about old age or just if you fancy it. Do you get where I'm coming from, Gavin? And I think that's where I think there's a distrust of sometimes our legislators to do as they say they will.
No, I understand that entirely. That's very often called the slippery slope.
Yeah.
You know, once you start down this road, where does it end? Well, the truth of the matter, Greg, is that in some countries around the world, their criteria has changed. But that's not a slippery slope. That's democracy at work. You know, whenever women were given the vote, the argument was, if you give them this, what else are they going to want? So you really can't take that, because democracy works. As communities get used to ideas, as communities get used to different ways of doing things, they change. I mean, your state shows that in dramatic and very positive ways. So I don't think that's really particularly a relevant reason not to have the legislation. It's a very relevant reason to have very strict legislation. For example, in Westminster, any change to the criteria will require a new bill to come through. So that is, I think, a fairly strict criteria to have in place. And it means that the people of England and Wales can be fairly sure that if they're going to widen the criteria in any way, they're going to have to go through this whole process again to do that. And to me, that's fair, because I think the conversation has to be had, and if necessary, has to be had again if you're going to try and widen the criteria. So I don't think it's something we need to be concerned about. I do appreciate that people would have some thoughts about that. It's not a reason not to do it. It's a reason to be conscious of it and to maybe revisit it every 3 to 5 years, which they do regularly in most jurisdictions around the world, and make sure you've got it right, and if necessary, change it. But it's not a reason not to do it.
God forbid, Gavin, if you found yourself in that position, are you sure that you would choose to expedite your passing?
Positive. Really? In fact, to the very point where I would be prepared to travel to Switzerland to do so. Now, but this is where there's also...
Can I ask what it is to avoid, or is that too personal a question?
Sorry, say it again, please.
Why are you so sure that you would want to die as soon as you possibly could? How do you know that you might not say, do you know what, stuff it, I'm going to just use any time I have to travel or spend time with family? And I hope that doesn't come across as trying to use an emotive argument or be personal. It's not my motivation at all. But, like, how can you be so certain that you wouldn't want to eke out every last breath?
Well, I would like to eke out as much breath as I could to make that absolutely clear. But it will get to the stage where if I'd be starting to lose my sense of dignity or my sense of self, I do not want that. And I certainly do not want my children or grandchildren to remember me as somebody in the corner in a semi-coma who's just gradually floating away to death, or indeed have a painful death.
I just think in that situation, if my grandchildren said, and again, I don't want, it's not personal, but they said to me, look, you know, I know what you think, but we want to do this. You've done so much for us. Don't do it, Greg, because we just want every moment with you. And if you were to do so, you think you're doing something good for us, but actually what you're doing is robbing us of time with you. And I just wonder then, in that situation, would I change my views if they were similar to yours?
Well, I'm fairly clear that I would. Now, I don't know what in the last minute what I would actually do, but I'm fairly clear that I would not. I would simply explain to my grandchildren that I've enjoyed my time with them, but the time has now come to an end, and it's going to come to an end at some stage. And I know it's going to come to an end, but I want it to come to an end at a time when I can have them close to me, when I know that they are there, when I can choose the actual last time of my death, rather than having to sit and wait for something to come to me that I know is coming anyway. Now, that's how I feel. I'm assuming, of course, I'd be losing my dignity and everything else. So it's very possible that I would have a very... Even if I have a terminal illness, I could have a very comfortable death and not even want to take advantage.
And what is dignity? You know, what is dignity? You know, like if I'm... Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's a complex one. Gavin, listen, thanks for the chat. And as you say, it's very important that people source their own information in relation to this, because on any argument, you've got people with an extreme view on one side or other, and then they'll try and conflate it with other stuff, and then they'll try and throw in emotional stuff, and clear the decks. Think about this yourself and look into it. I think it's always valuable, and hopefully this conversation has helped in some way or other. Gavin Walker, Chair of Campaign Group My Death, My Decision. Take care.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. A caller says, Esther Ranson was such a supporter of End of Life Choice, but when it came to it, she did not take that choice. And I've heard from Gavin there, he's pretty resolute, but also didn't rule out the fact that he might change his mind. So we have to be careful that I suppose when we're arguing for something like this is... Yeah, okay. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. As I say, I don't know, and I find it hard to... I couldn't judge anyone in this... You know, I've done the interviews with husbands of wives that just want to be able to go out on their terms. Is the one that springs to mind just right now. And how could I, in my comfortable, currently healthy situation, dictate to them how they should spend, you know, their lives in pain or discomfort or dignity being a factor? I wouldn't be too worried about my dignity, but some people might. I did it for them. They can do it for me if that's what it comes down to. All right, let's take a break. Back with the weather. A caller says, when you get married to someone you love, you make a promise in sickness and in health. it seems very cold to me. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the conversation about assisted dying is kind of like about gut and what you would you do in your situation? What would you want to be able to do? I really find it very difficult to have a strong opinion that could impact negatively on somebody else when it's not me in that situation. Waiting patiently for tickets for Donegal's game on Sunday. But why is everyone saying it won't be a sellout because of the rally happening? Well, it's not. I don't know. I suppose it's about how big a fan you are. Like, if you went to Roscommon from Donegal at the weekend, you know, you're a big fan. It was a very early start. You know you were facing tough travel conditions. And as a result, you know that probably you'd have been standing in Hyde Park for quite some time. You know, not everyone has that level of commitment. So fair play to Donegal turning up in such big numbers. In terms of, it's probably maybe avoidance. Maybe people might try and avoid it or not travel. Say, for instance, on Sunday, if you are on, I don't want to give specific townlands because I'm not quite sure, but so there's certainly parts of Downings anyway, and maybe parts of Fannet, I'm not quite sure, that you would you can't sort of get out of where you're living after 10:30 or 11:00. So you'd have to be on the road very early to make it to Ballybuffet for a 4:00 throw-in, if that makes sense. So there's maybe factors like that. The subject of crests and school uniforms was on Highland Radio 20 years ago. Progress, what progress? I referenced that. We've been talking about it forever. But maybe things might change, he said. I'm concerned that the opt-out register for organ donations is not available yet, despite the register is now live today. Well, it's from 10 o'clock, so it'll be available then for you. A couple of you are commenting on that. I have concerns about organ harvesting and feel this automatic organ donation today is a step too far. But what's organ harvesting? You know, they're not cutting them out of everybody and freezing them. I know where you're coming from. But that terminology is designed to make people really concerned about the whole thing. We can talk about it though. Very happy to have your views on it. Again, it's something that I'm not really quite sure about. Back with more after the news and obituary notices. In fact, we'll have the latest appeals and information from Angada Síochána.